I would love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the Automatically Deleted Husband. It's been a long weekend and a busy day, so I'm gonna try to be amazingly short. One of the most important things is Saturday. I've had a problem for the last several years in that because I've lost so much weight, I've lost 40 pounds. 40 pounds. It was fascinating to me because I got on a scale back in summertime, and instead of being 240-something, 198. And I got on a scale about a week ago. I'm moved back up to 202. So, I mean, this is, of course, wearing boots and so forth. One of the concerns I've had, especially because of, I notice it doing a lot of things, but a very clear way to see it is when I do my jumping jacks, like in the morning, which I've now passed 280,000 towards my million goal. But anyway, one of the things I do is I do my hands like this instead of this, because my ring is tending to fall off because it's really loose. Because, I mean, I don't have the padding that I used to have. And so Saturday I was I'm not wearing it right now, but the thing that I normally wear in the colder months, I had it in the sink washing it, and soapy water and so forth, it grabbed my ring and pulled it off into the sink. That hit me really hard, because that is the first time in about 30 years my ring was off my finger. So this ring has been on my finger continuously for about 30 years until Saturday. It hit me hard. It wasn't off for more than a few seconds, but it is a symbol, because on the top of that picture frame right there is my wife's ring. And I've stated before, she said that she'd be willing to put it back on again. I don't believe that. I'm sorry, I don't believe it. I would like to put it back on her. It's there for her and her alone. My commitment is to her and her alone, all the remaining days of my life. But anyway, that really got to me. Other important thing is, I looked at the 10-day forecast on the weather, and this coming weekend looks like it'll be in the 70s, and that's kind of like, wow. So, I sent out an email, and, I've been in conversation with Chris. So right now we have in light pencil, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Big Frog Mountain. we tried three times during the end of last year. It didn't happen. But Lord willing, this weekend or Friday, anyway, so that 3-day period, one of those days, be at the top of Big Frog again. And because of that, I sent the card today to George to invite him again. I want to hike with my son, George. A serious hike. In the process, we had a delightful conversation because one of the things, I had a discussion a week, 2 weeks ago with a lady who is, let's say, not complete upstairs. And she made a comment. She said, she is, I think, 50s. And she made a comment that her dad was a pastor. And, it's kind of like, the way she's talking, it's kind of like, so what? But she made the comment about the Jews are the chosen people. And I made the comment, not according to the Bible. And it was, because I think I mentioned before, it's the idea of answer a fool, answer not a fool, because there is, you know, we discussed it today. There is the passage in Deuteronomy that's often used. ESV, Deuteronomy 7:6, "For you are people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his treasured possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth." And people say, aha, right there! the LSV has an interesting reading. "But for you are a holy people to your God, Yahweh, and your God Yahweh has fixed on you to be for him a peculiar people out of all the peoples who are on the face of the ground." And of course, my wife especially will remember the comedy duo, Peculiar People, that we met, and actually I recorded some of the stuff for them when they came to Meadowview in Lexington many years ago, and then I think they ended up moving to Greensboro. But anyway, but the idea of being chosen and set apart for a particular purpose are two different things. And that's what this Deuteronomy 7 is. And as we discussed it, I think we have a fairly concise way that's consistent, because we do have the Hebrews passage about you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, and so forth, specifically talking about the elect, whereas this is you're set apart. And then of course there's the thing in Romans and Corinthians about Romans is the idea of what benefit is there for being a Jew, you know, much in many ways, but trying to figure out what is that benefit. And because we talked about it, there's strong evidence that somebody like Noah, Enoch, and Job, for example, who clearly predate Abraham, are part of the elect. They are redeemed by God. How are they redeemed by God? In each case, they had a face-to-face meeting with God. In other words, they had a face-to-face meeting with Jesus Christ before Abraham had a face-to-face meeting with Jesus Christ. So, with that in mind, we can see that it's not that you have to be a descendant of Abraham, but you have to be redeemed by the Lord. And that is not because you're a descendant of Abraham. But what advantage is there? And I really think a reasonable response, you know, and of course, we'll you know, happy to engage anybody on this. A reasonable response is, if you're somebody during the time of Abraham, who may have been in the region of modern-day China, in Africa, South America, somewhere else in the world, you know, or the comment Chris made, you were in Egypt. And obviously the people were there, but you weren't part of that group. So you didn't have the advantage of hearing from your descendants who are taught in Deuteronomy 6 to teach your children and then grandchildren. And then so that the idea of be obedient to Christ, to the Lord, and the fundamental obedience is to love the Lord and love your neighbor. You are taught that because your descendants directly interfaced, face-to-face meeting with Christ. Whereas, you know, take a Chinese person, for example, you know, or the often used example, the native in Africa, or, you know, somebody in wherever, Australia, who did not have that interaction and does not have the descendants who have that direct knowledge. Well, if you are a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, if you're a descendant in that lineage, then that you should have somebody directly in your heritage who should have passed this on and on. That would be an advantage. That'd be a serious advantage. If you were away and were not taught the joy, the beauty, the magnificence of the grace of the Lord, because none of your descendants knew, you don't have that advantage. I really think, I really think that really is the essence of this. And of course, being grafted in, what is my duty? Which is what I'm striving to do this very moment with this video, to teach my children. When I walk along the path and so forth, walk along the road, whatever it was, Deuteronomy 6. Or leave him a voicemail because in disobedience to Christ, I'm being isolated from them. I want to tell them about our Creator. My wife is right. Jesus is the Redeemer. But be complete. Jesus is the Redeemer of his elect. And how do you know you're part of the elect? If you love him, you obey his commandments. Fundamental commandments. Love. Let's make it clear. There's no love for me. So when the Lord says, love your neighbor, and then again, the question, who is my neighbor, and then the Good Samaritan story. Obviously, if you read the Good Samaritan story in detail, you'll find the nuance there. It's love your enemies, except me, right? Love the worst people in the world, the people who have done foul things and whatnot, because they're your enemies, they're trying to hurt you, except don't love me. That's what the story says, right? If you find that in there, I would suggest throw away that Bible because it's a mistranslation. Anyway, being quick, one other thing. You may be aware that there's a lot of stuff in the news right now about Ukraine. My assumption is in a little while it'll disappear. Several reasons. Why? Because I would suggest a good part of it is the distraction. Because, you know, what was in the news recently? Trudeau and his issues with the truckers and so forth. And, of course, the COVID-19 narrative is falling apart. So we have to find something to distract so we don't have to say we were wrong, but we just simply have moved on. And so many other things. But it's being sensationalized right now. It's being used for economic warfare. And what fascinates me, you know, and of course, there's the common line, the first casualty of a war is the truth. So, you know, and you can see huge amounts of evidence. I just saw where apparently, you know, because the big thing now is TikTok, which, you know, anyway. And apparently on TikTok, there are a whole bunch of people who are using, as I've described before, photos from years ago and say, this is what's happening in Ukraine right now. You know, it's fascinating to me. There's the short little video blurb where you see the missile that strikes a high-rise apartment in Kiev. I think it's in Kiev. And put a pretty big hole in there. And apparently there was no one in the directly in the apartment that was hit directly. But there was a security camera that got video footage of, look, here's a missile hitting our apartment. Kind of like, wow. But apparently some people were injured, maybe even killed. I don't know. But the issue is, who fired it? And of course, I don't know. I don't know if it's known yet, because obviously the first group's blamed the Russians. But from what I understand, it's one of these Buk missiles, which are old Soviet Union era missiles. It's the MH17, the airliner that was shot down over Ukraine. And of course, Russia is blamed because the Soviet Union built it, but those missiles were in Ukraine. So there's the possibility that just like with MH17, a lot of those missiles are not in the hands of, well, the Soviet Union, obviously because it's gone, nor are they in the hands of Russia. They're in the hands of Ukraine. And they don't have the accuracy as a modern missile does. And so there is some suggestion that it was fired by the Ukrainians. And because it isn't as accurate, hit the building instead of whatever target it was going after. This is a possibility. It could be a Russian missile that hit it. I don't think it's that likely, because if it is indeed a Buk missile, then I don't think the Russians are using them anymore. I don't think they've used them in ages. So if it was the Russians, it probably is a different missile. And my assumption would be, because the argument is the guidance system malfunctioned, which is reasonable. But that could be true of Russian or Ukrainian. So the likelihood this was a targeted go hit that building is really small. If it was targeted, my guess is the Russians wouldn't be that stupid because of the bad press it would give. But the Ukrainians might say, okay, let's get people, especially if they, you know, get people out of the building and they shot it at the building in order to blame it on Russia. That's a possibility, you know, the false flag idea. I don't know. So all these things are on the table, but, you know, I don't know. And the problem is a whole bunch of people are saying, absolutely, this is what happened. There's a problem there. But the other thing is, we have to remember, this war didn't start last week. This started 8 years ago. And it's not however many in the last week have died. Before the last week, something over 13,000 have died. And most of them are in the Donbass region, the breakoff area. So it's not a clean, crisp, clean story here. Again, what is true? I don't know for sure. But you know, one of the things you hear about is the idea that you hear the Russians saying constantly, part of the objective here is denazification. Where do you find that idea also? From the Donbass region, because they're concerned about the Nazis. And the number because I've seen this before, you know, and seen again, the number of people who are Nazi, I've seen now interviews of people who are there talking about the neo-Nazis. They have people in leadership now. You see them, especially images from years ago, in these same kind of gatherings that happened during the previous Reich. During 30s and 40s in Germany. Same kind of gatherings, same kind of marches and so forth. Those same techniques are used, and they've been used in Ukraine. They've been used in other places. The idea of a rebirth of neo-Nazis is happening in a lot of places. It's some of it even in Germany, even though it's illegal there, it's still there. Is it Hungary? There's several other countries. I think there's some in Belarus. I'm not sure, but there are number of places. And of course, one of the other places where you find the neo-Nazis is that country. It's not in Europe. It's called the United States. The American Nazi Party is very real. And of course, what do these people do in the United States when the neo-Nazis, the American Nazis, or whatever they call? What do they do when they gather? They do usually have, a lot of times you'll see they have the torchlight processions and so forth. And what do they say? They don't speak German. And if you look at a video of them, what they're saying is, "Hail victory." Literally, they will repeat over and over again, "Hail victory." Why? Because in German, it's Sieg Heil. Exactly what was said in the Nuremberg rallies in 1930s. Same thing. You know, Sieg Heil or Heil Hitler, Hitler were the two common expressions used. It's happening today. And it's been happening in Ukraine for a long time. I don't know what it is in Russian and the Ukrainian language. Well, it's mostly Ukrainian language because I don't think the Russians really, at least the Russians in the Ukrainian area or the Donbass, really appreciate this kind of stuff. But I'm hearing from people. I just saw an interview from a guy who's an American who been living in Ukraine for a whole number of years, actually married a Ukrainian lady, and has talked about the Nazis there. Because it's not that, oh, we hear about them. He has pictures of them. He sees them. He's been there. And I saw another person. I'll get to him. The other thing that I find fascinating, because again, when I saw this, because I saw this years ago, and I thought, this was really stupid. Because I haven't in a while, but I used to quite frequently watch the videos from the Council on Foreign Relations, because they would have a public meetings and private meetings. And in their public meetings, you know, they will state, this is on the record, you know, to warn everybody that, you know, careful what you say. Because I remember there was one time I watched, and I watched a woman who asked a question, and it was very clear she shouldn't have asked that question because she put the speaker on the spot. And that was noticed. And I made a comment years ago that she's probably done. That ended her relationship with the Council on Foreign Relations. You know, and it reminded me, too, of obviously the event I mentioned when I brought up the question, whatever the question was, to the general, I think it's General Bell, at Covenant Presbyterian in Chattanooga during a Saturday men's breakfast thing. And, you know, you could tell the room got tense when I made the comment, made the question, and it wasn't really answered, and then somebody told me afterwards, I agree with you, but I wouldn't have asked that question. Because again, there's certain questions you don't ask. But you know, why don't you ask that? Because you're a coward if you don't. But anyway, so Biden is at a Council of Foreign Relations meeting. This is long before he announced, even before he announced his run for president. It was probably during the Trump administration. I don't think it was during the Obama administration when he was still in office. But so he has this meeting with the guy who's the head of the CFR. That guy. Again, I'm great with names. So the two of them are having the discussion, and he talked about being in Ukraine. I mean, again, this is while he was vice president. And he was talking about some negotiation for business dealings and so forth, and that there was somebody who was doing within the Ukrainian government who was doing something to investigate things that were stalling things that wasn't, whatever it was, it wasn't working to his advantage. And he said this publicly, that he put pressure. He said, okay, we're leaving in about 2 hours. If that man isn't fired, you don't get your loan, because they were negotiating for a multi-billion dollar loan. And before I got in the airplane, he said, before I got in the airplane, that man was fired. This is pressure politics. He admitted it. And then he runs for president, gets elected. That shocked me. When you know, I saw that and I thought, you know, a rational constituency would say, no, I don't want a man like that who uses that kind of pressure to be the head of the country. Anyway, but again, he's just a face, as Clinton was, as Bush's were, as Obama was. He's just a face, as Trump was. Anyway. But of course, you know, the other thing that's fascinating is Biden has a son, Hunter, who has made a lot of news, mostly in the alternative media, not in the mainstream media, because of a little incident that became very public because he did not manage well his laptop, which had a lot of photos and things on it. And some of those pictures have become public, and they're not what you would call charming. For normal people, that have you put in jail. You know, when you have a picture of you having sex with a minor, that's usually considered not good. When you have pictures of you just completely, you know, cigarette hanging over your mouth, really high in cocaine, I think, or whatever it was, that doesn't look good. And so it was sequestered. You know, the mainstream media wouldn't cover it because, you know, Biden's their man and that's his son. And we separate the son from the dad because we're electing the dad, not the son. But what does the son do? He's making, I think, like it's $50,000 a month from Burisma, a Ukrainian oil company. That's a good income. And apparently still gets that kind of money. And one of the discussions I heard is, who does he have a good relationship, Hunter Biden, with? And Mr. Zelensky, who was an actor, a comedian, who played the role of the president of Ukraine as a crooked president, and then he actually becomes the president of Ukraine. He's literally a comedian. And so he's, again, just a front man, just like some typical politician. But apparently he has a good relationship with Hunter Biden. And the allegation, and I don't know how true this is they have enjoyed the same kind of recreational activity. In the sense of cocaine, I don't know about the sexual exploits. And, you know, I find this, there's these credibility things. But what happens is you don't want to look into that if that's your man, if that's the front you want to have. Because a lot of the people who are pointing this stuff out are not. They're silenced. They are silenced. And I find this stuff amazing. And of course, the question comes in, is how much of this is true? You know, it's, you know, the laptop thing is, I mean, it's evident. I've seen some of the pictures. And anyway, you know, the picture of him kind of, I think that anyway. The evidence is quite strong about, it's admitted that he has had a cocaine problem. But these other things, how much is it we take, we have evidence he's this way, and let's exploit it and put him in a situation that makes him look bad? You know, it could be, for example, there are five things that are alleged. And let's say four of them are true and one of them isn't. And what you'll do is use the one that isn't and say, look, that blows the credibility of all of it, even though the other four are true. Or it could be one is true and the other four are false. And you'll say, because the one is true, that the others must be. So it really becomes difficult. It's look at the things that are blatant and obvious and can be verified. For example, I've got the video, and it's easy to find. Go to the CFR website, YouTube channel, and get the Biden interview. It's right there, where he does this pressure politics in Ukraine. I mean, this is just, the evidence is right there, but we don't want to look at evidence if it doesn't support our agenda. I listened to another, again, I listened to an excellent conversation on the Duran. It was initially the Alex and Alexander talking again about the events in Ukraine and so forth. And I really think, in general, you know, I would suggest, I don't think they would agree with this, but I would suggest the problem is, it's not that one country is better than another. We shouldn't have the political entities. Why? Because that's a rejection of the Lord. And that's the Lord's words. 1 Samuel 8 is clear. You set up a ruler, a king, it's a rejection of God. Unambiguous. So, you know, I'm short video, great. One of the things I want to remind my family, because you may recall it's the Wall Builders Organization. The gentleman who runs that, and I won't be able to think of his name, so why bother trying? I've met him like 3 times and had a couple of short conversations with him. All 3 times in Greensboro. Yeah, all 3 times in Greensboro. And I thought when he was telling me about historic events, it was true. I would suggest it's embellished. But one of the things, I think I heard it from him, it may be somebody like him, so I'm not sure about that. But the arguments of, one of the arguments that America is a, or U.S. is a Christian country, is the idea that this tiered layer of government, where we have the federal, state, county, local, city, so forth, that's in obedience to the Bible. Excuse me a moment. Not at all. Because the argument is given, it's Exodus 18. And we have the example there of the commanders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. That's where we first see it. And we say, oh, the American system is built on biblical principles. And here is one example. That is not the Lord's principles. Look at the passage. It is the advice of Jethro to Moses. It is not a command of the Lord. It is actually opposite to the Lord's command. And again, like I say, if you look at Deuteronomy chapter 1, you can see where Moses said, I said to you, and then the Lord said to you. So he made the difference. And he distinguishes, for example, when he put in the hierarchy to do some of the deeds, that was him, that was Moses, on the advice of Jethro. That was not what the Lord commanded. And, you know, again, I showed where Saul, King Saul, uses that to hold power. Well, will David make you commanders of thousands and hundreds and so forth? It was a tool. It is not a command of the Lord. Because, as I point out, Genesis 1:28, you know, we are given literally to be the overlord of the earth and the animal kingdom. But for the follower of Christ, not so among you, as Jesus termed it. That's what the Gentiles do. So if you say it's a Christian principle, you have been deceived. Simply put, you have been deceived. So the idea that somehow the U.S. is a Christian country, therefore we're better. And again, and we're democratic and that's good. But remember, democracy and freedom are opposites. They're 100% opposite. Because the minority is not free in a democracy. It's that simple. Plus, obviously, the democracy we have, as in most other places, is not because of free rational choice by people. It is irrational choice by advertisers, pressures, and things of that nature. It is tyranny of the masses is often described, because again, you get a bunch of people together, and somebody says, "I'm going to get you this benefit. Vote for me." People will vote for him because they don't see that the benefit is coming, putting them in enslavement. It's somehow, well, I get a benefit, so I'm going to vote for you. It's exactly how it works. But of course, again, as I pointed out, we look at Russia as the remnants of the Soviet Union. And no, I would suggest it is as democratic as the U.S. A different flavor, has the same corruptions as we have in the U.S., and we have a lot of them here. It's just a different flavor. And so when you make an accusation about, oh, that country is bad, you know, again, it's the idea of, oh, Assad is bad because he gasses his own people. Well, I'm sorry, there's no evidence for that. It's an excuse to demonize him. And the issue there is, no, I think he did a very good job in trying to protect his country in that context, but the problem is he's a socialist. And that's where the problem is. So attack. You know, if you're going to challenge him something, challenge him on something that is true and a problem. But accuse him falsely is not a good idea. It's like accusing Trump of Russian collusion, whereas you accuse Trump of firing missiles into Syria because that was murder. You know, and or the other example, because I find it great. Accuse Biden of being incompetent. Well, yeah, there's a lot of evidence for that. But they use that image, the video of him falling twice, going up the steps to Air Force One, and you make a mockery of that, and say, see, he's clumsy. Well, being clumsy, so what? But at the same time, a wimp would have, oh no, I've fallen, I'll have to go back, or help me, whatnot. He fell twice, and he got up, and he got to the top. That is actually a bit of credibility. And you make a mockery of him because he trips? No. He made it to the top. So the issue is, I think people will look at that and laugh, and yes, you can get a laugh out of it. But if you use that to condemn, the person you're condemning is yourself. He has a lot of issues, whole lot of them. He is just a figurehead. He's just as bad as all the other figureheads as before. But when you challenge or condemn somebody, and you do it on emotions, you got a problem. But anyway, so much. I saw another interview with a gentleman who is in Kiev right now. And his name is Gonzalo Lira. He's in Kiev. And I'll put this text in the email, because he wrote about it, wrote a couple things about it. This is something he wrote a few days ago, because he's right there, and acting the job of reporter and so forth. But I was watching the Duran, the two Alex and Alexander, and then well into the program, they invited him in. So it was a three-way conversation, and he's in Kiev. One's in London, one's in Greece, one's in Kiev. We live in a strange world. And they're having this three-way conversation on video. And then the conversation goes to the fact that he's in a hotel room and they're saying, stay in the hotel room, don't come out. And he talked about, I have young kids. And his concern for his kids. And the difficulty he has. He's grateful that they weren't in the war zone. But in the dialogue, there was a moment where Alexander, I think it is, when he talked about his kids, he made a gasp sound. And it's kind of like, I can relate. And he talked about how he has his kids. He wants to take care of them, protect them, and it's hard not to see them. But he's grateful that he uses, I think he said telegram, but he uses in order to communicate with them. And he was grateful for that ability. I'm going to leave you a clip at the end of this on the video version of this. Listen for that gasp and understand what that man felt or is feeling about his kids. He's been separated from his kids for a few days and he's in a war zone. But that man is loved, obviously. In a few months, I'll be separated from my kids. For 10 years. Unlike Gonzalo. Which is ironic because about 2 years ago, year and a half ago, whatnot, I had a gentleman here from Argentina who was here and we did some work for gas pump stuff. His name was Gonzalo. Anyway. But this man has this passion about his kids. He's not the only one that way. One of us has been denied. Something about an absence of love. Lord willing, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, I'll be at the top of Big Frog Mountain. Lord willing, I will do a video at the top of Big Frog Mountain of me doing jumping jacks again. Yeah, again, how many people young or 66 can take an 11-mile hike, go a half mile up, and at the top, well, you know, half the hike up, half the hike back, but at the top, do jumping jacks. I guess I'm in good shape. And Lord willing, I will be able to demonstrate that again this weekend. Because I made a promise to my wife that I would do what I can to live to be 90. Because I love my wife. Dorothy Jane, my lady. As I've said several times already, at the top of Big Frog Mountain, Dorothy Jane, my lady, I love you. And I'm, Lord willing, I'll be doing that again. So, my lady, I love you, and I want you back. Allow me now to introduce you to another Gonzalo.